Look, Matt.
Where? Oh, I see. Wow.
Oh, my.
Oh, and look over there.
Wow, is that Ooh. Culture?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Las Culturistas.
Ding dong! Las Culturistas calling!
Happy Gru Year!
20, absolutely 21. Happy Gru Year to you.
You are singing a little bar of this song.
Oh my God.
Is stuck in your head, and you said we have to talk about it. And I actually do want to have a meta conversation after you tell me about who this Olivia girl is.
That's good to know that an interest of mine has already inspired a meta conversation for you.
Yes.
All right. Well, the hook in the song goes like this. Guess you didn't mean what you said in your song about me. And it's Olivia Rodrigo. And the song is Driver's License.
Who is she?
She was a Disney star girl, and now she's going to have a Billboard Hot 100 number one hit because this song has exploded.
I have not heard of this Olivia girl. Maybe I've been living under a damn rock.
Well, she's literally a young girl. She's 17. She's very young girl. Like, the young Gen Zers know about her, and I believe that it is because of their knowledge of her that she sort of exploded so, because she is going to have like a number one hit on the Billboard charts, and it was just released. Now, pray tell, what is this meta conversation?
Well, I don't mean to bring this tone into our discourse, especially so early on in the year. I am just a little, I'm once again finding myself to be a little disappointed in my sister. I try to introduce my sister to some culture and she is not enthusiastic. She is not playing Breath of the Wild. She's not getting into any video game culture.
I told you why I wasn't playing it. Because the space, I didn't have enough space.
That's no, on that's my not, that's
on the disc
true.
Or whatever.
You ended no, Ellen. That's not the truth. You
don't call me Ellen. First of all, shut up. For you, really, and also you did bring me to bring this energy in. Of course, I downloaded Breath of the Wild and I played it for about 3 hours.
You didn't even get off the damn plateau and you've written off this masterpiece
I
of the game.
I tried to get off the plateau and I told you what my next move was, that I was going to go online and look at like what to do online. I just didn't get to it. I'm actually busy.
Meanwhile, you know that I'm going to, after this episode ends, I'm going to, you know, as a courtesy to my friend, check out this Olivia girl.
And you're going to have to listen to that song for 4 minutes. And I played Breath of the Wild for hours. And also, how dare you? How dare you say that I'm not exposing myself to new culture? You know, I watched all 19 hours of The Sound of Music. I wanted to talk about it today.
No, it truly. Okay, we'll talk about it. But look, I'm sorry, reader, that we are bringing, Matt and I are on very good terms. I've thought very fondly.
I don't understand you.
What do you mean? No.
No, you came on the Zoom and you were shaking your eyes at me. You were saying,
I'm done with you, you beast. You beast.
You are a beast. You are the beast. You're pure evil.
How dare you?
It's pure evil.
It
is. You are a beast. I don't understand what this is, because I came on today excited to see you. Fuck.
I was met with silence when I texted the thread.
I had just finished the ad that you were late on the Zoom, and I had to do the ritual ad by myself. Bitch.
No, no jester.
Don't start with me.
No
honey.
Jester. That's not even what I'm referring
so,
to.
You're
That's
a jester. What, you look like a jester right now.
Flop. Flop.
You look like Utica Queen Jester Flop. That's what you look like, Flop.
I was saying, like, you've been flop-town in the group text when I said, I need some of my friends to start watching 90 Day Fiancé with me, because I feel like I'm all alone over here. No one responded except Aaron Jackson. My sister will refuses to watch 90 Day Fiancé with me when I tell him that it's an excellent reality viewing experience.
First of all, one time when I was at your apartment, we did watch 90 Day Fiancé. And also, listen, Bowen Yang, if that's really your name, because you don't seem like my sister right now. You seem like an absolute attacker.
Mm.
You look like one of those you-know-whats. Attackers.
I don't know what. What are you trying
to
say?
You look like one of those Capitol Hill attackers. No, we gotta cut that out. Okay. No.
We're not cutting that out.
What I'm saying is,
my sister accused me of being an insurrectionist. We're recording this after truly the fire on the Reichstag of our country. Oh my God.
I can't believe. Wait, I definitely want to talk about it. But wait, first, I just want to say that you listening to Olivia Rodrigo is going to be a 4-minute experience. It's one song. Me getting into 90 Day Fiancé. Do you have any idea how much trash I watch on television? I have so much stuff to watch.
Add one more to the pile, honey.
Okay, but I'm saying it's not an attack on you that I'm not watching 90 Day Fiancé. It's also so funny that we're arguing like this in our matching Taylor Swift cardigans. The readers can't see, but we're both wearing our cardigans.
Look, I just wanted to, start this year off with some honesty. That's it. And I feel this way. Sometimes I don't get to share in the cultural experiences that I'm enjoying at the moment because my sister is over there saying things like, you know, and I'm like, I guess I have to.
And you already remember the hook.
Not the lyrics. That's the important part. Not the lyrics flop. I don't remember the damn lyrics.
You didn't mean all the things you said and you saw. I've listened to it like three times.
Why is it called Driver's License?
Because the song is about how she's young, and so the song is about, like, I got my driver's license like we always talked about. That's how the song starts. It's really good. Can I just say, it's sort of like, it's like Taylor Swift lyrics with, like, Billie Eilish, like, delivery in terms of vocals until she opens up and there's some Ariana Grande capability in there.
And then who does she become?
She sort of becomes an amalgamation of them all. She becomes Olivia Rodrigo, you see.
Well, I guess I'll check her out. I really recommend you start watching season 2 or 3 of 90 Day Fiancé before the 90 days. I'm sure so many readers are in 90 Day Nation, but I find it so wonderful because it's the perfect cleaning show. It's the perfect show to, like, put on in the background while you fold laundry, mm-hmm. while you do little mm-hmm. chores around the home, cooking, cleaning, and ironing, all of it. I really think my sister would enjoy it.
Those sorts of house things.
Yes, house things.
Now, I just wanted, because this is sort of the extent of my knowledge about 90 Day Fiancé. It is an arranged fiancé program. And basically, you meet someone from in the world that wants to get married as well. And they follow you for 90 days and then you get married. Is that the idea?
And the baseline, I guess, I don't know if you call it that. The original 90 Day Fiancé series is people from foreign countries coming to America on a K-1 visa mm-hmm. in order to meet people that they may or may not already be engaged to, Americans, and then they have 90 days to get married. The spinoffs, like before the 90 days, are the Americans going to the foreign countries to meet these people for the first time, people that they've chatted with on apps, fall in love. It's not the show arranging it. It's that the show finds people who have already been in these conversations. Sometimes it's clear that the couples just want to be on TV. And sometimes, you know, in some tragic cases, someone will go to a foreign country to meet someone and the person won't show up.
Oh, that's a tragedy.
Very tragic.
Yeah, that's very tragic.
There's 90 Day Fiancé the other way, which is Americans going to foreign country to live there, to move to other mm-hmm. countries to be with their future spouses. There's just a lot of beautiful storytelling going on. Tragic storytelling, Shakespearean.
Yeah, it feels that way. And so after the 90 days is, I guess, just like a sort of docuseries about what's happened to them post the show.
Well, yeah. And sometimes there's one called Happily Ever After, which is that. Or sometimes the people from before the 90 days move on to the mainline 90 Day Fiancé series. People like Angela and Michael, people like Darcy,
They seem iconic. The fact that you knew their names suggests to me that they're the icons of the show.
Well, to me, I've only dealt with like a very small sample of the show so far, but I'm really digging into the back catalog. The readers know and the readers can tell, the readers can very politely tell Matt to give Matt the Survivor syllabus equivalent to 90 Day Fiancé. I think you would love it, queen.
I'm sure I would. And I want to say, especially given what we've seen in the last week or so, I wanted to thank you for saying to the readers, please politely
yes.
tell Matt to do this. Because what I would hate is if you incited violence against me. If Bowen Yang got on this podcast and said a dog whistle, he would say, which he says them, and you say a dog whistle to all the fans and then they come for me. And then it becomes a real problem. Pig's head on my door because I'm not watching 90 Day Fiancé.
You just called the readers fans, which feels blasphemous to me. No. When have we ever called them fans? Stupid.
Roll back the tape. I never said that.
Yes,
one.
You did, girl. Okay.
Well, I dare you roll back the tape. I dare you to move. How are you, girl? How literally are you?
I am literally. I'm okay. I'm doing well. I'm kind of spiraling in the way that feels useless but necessary. I don't know. I don't know. How about you?
Are you spiraling because of the macro or the micro?
The macro. The micro is great. The micro is excellent.
I love that the micro is great. I love to hear that.
The vibe is, I'm truly just at home vibing out to 90 Day Fiance. Do you understand?
Okay, yes. I do, I do. And you know I know what it's like to have a reality show sort of save you.
Yes.
So understand.
Matt, but this is a test of the friendship. Okay?
Okay, all right. I'm sorry. Can I tell you something? When we come back for another culture catch-up, I will have watched so much of it. I swear to you.
You, because this is the equivalent of you coming to me being like, you have to watch Survivor. Parvati is an icon. Okay. I'm telling you, you have to watch 90 Day Fiancé before the 90 Days. Darcy and Angela are true icons. And the readers can...
All right. I'm really excited. I really am excited. And listen, this will be a personal failing if I don't follow up on this. So I literally am going to do it. And it's not like I'm doing anything else. I'm literally doing nothing.
There you go.
It's like Real Housewives of Dallas came back and you would think it was fucking American Idol season 2. I blew up balloons and shit. Seriously. It's like getting so sad and dark in here.
For Rod?
I mean, no, but in spirit, yes. I balloons for Rod.
Is that what the people call it? Is that
R-H-O-D? I mean, R-H-O-D. The community kind of just says Dallas. You know what I mean? It's not like Roni.
Roni's the only city that has that.
Yeah, pretty much. Like you're not saying, did you watch Rop?
Rop.
Did you catch a Rop on Sunday? Which, by the way, now we know how it ends.
Yeah. Oh, you know what, Monique, Miss Monique. It's
got rough there at the end.
Well, I don't even, this might be a lot and this will get back to her, I'm sure. But like, I was like pretty close to unfollowing because it's just her like posting shit where she's like at a gun range with no mask on with like groups of people. And then the Chris Samuels of it all, like them Streisand affecting that fucking transphobic comment that he made. I'm like, I would not have known that he had made that comment if he did not bring it up on the show to defend himself. I was like, this is so unfortunate.
Yeah.
It's anyway.
I mean, so many elements of that comment were bad. There came a point during that reunion. I think it was honestly the transphobic comment, or maybe at some point before that. But I fully kind of abandoned Monique towards the end of that reunion. I was like, oh no, this is really. I don't see her taking accountability for this emotionally in a way that's justifiable at all. I was like. And it's not that I like Candace more at the end of this reunion, but I was like, she is the only one, it's clear, can continue with this show.
Yes.
Because, yeah, I would say the Chris comment really put me over the edge when he said that Bruce Jenner thing. I was like, okay, there's just starting there. Like, I was like, there's already a lot wrong with this.
It's a twofer. It's a twofer horrid comment, basically for readers who don't watch. So Chris Samuels, Monique Samuels' husband, was really mad at the other housewives, basically.
He said, I wish I could turn into Bruce Jenner so I could like, and the insinuation was, if only he were a woman, he could beat the women's asses that are on the cast. And it was like, okay, you can't go there, probably. This feels dark on dark on dark.
It's so many layers of dark. It's like, okay, so you want to violently assault these women, A. B, you are dead naming a trans person. C, you are saying you are reducing a trans identity to affording you the ability to be violent against a woman. It was truly like such a crazy nexus of darkness that I was like, and for that reason, I'm out. To quote our friend Pat Regan and the Sharks.
And for that reason, I'm out. No, yeah, I definitely wouldn't invest in Monique Samuels at this point.
No.
With a lot of love for her from prior to that.
Yes.
But I just think it says a lot about a person that you could sit by someone saying that and not make a bigger deal of the fact. Like when they said to him, like, this comment was unacceptable, he was like, oh, come on. You know, I wouldn't. You know, that's not how I feel. Right. And then moved right on. I was like, no, anyone in their right mind living in the now would see themselves saying that and be like, I'm horrified. It's unacceptable. And then would close their mouth probably about all other topics. Like, but he was really on one. It looked very badly on her. It reflected badly on her, rather. And I was just like, you know what? it's gotten to the point where this group of women is never going to mesh again. It's clear they won't film with her. And so Monique Samuels leaves Potomac in bad fashion.
Yes, terrible fashions. The dresses were bad. The color was bad. But you and I, you know, had to unfortunately sell low on Monique Samuels.
And that happens. And that happens.
Happens all the time.
I mean, you know whose stock is plummeting? Twitter. Did you hear this? I don't know. It must have been as a result of them banning Trump, but their stock apparently plummeted.
That's really too bad.
It's really fucking too bad. Should have plummeted 4 years ago, you ass. And I'm talking to Jack when I say that.
Ooh.
It honestly is so good for the world that happened. Like that honestly felt like the first moment in the dissolution of his presidency, or rather the election of President-elect Biden, that it kind of felt like, oh, wow, there's going to be real repercussions for him. And it was the first time where I believed like maybe ultimately he will get what he deserved, because I just never saw Twitter doing the right thing or all these social media platforms doing the right thing, because they literally never have.
Yeah.
So now that this is happening, I'm kind of like, not excited is not the right word, but I'm anticipating real fallout for him. The only thing that obviously worries me now, as we've seen, is what's truly apparent is that he can go, but the people he's emboldened and created a new hatred in and a new sort of fire in obviously remain. And we had, honestly, one of the scariest things I can remember watching on television. I don't know if you were watching live, but I was watching MSNBC. But when this happened at the Capitol, I was literally watching when they pulled out the woman who was shot and killed because she was trying to climb in a fucking window at the Capitol.
Right.
In a pretty much successful attempt to disrupt democracy that day. I was just like, I couldn't fucking believe it. Has to be the last thing, but you're questioning whether or not that's true.
Well, I think I know what you mean in terms of like, there was an outcome potentially where like Biden wouldn't have prosecuted Trump before the insurrection. Biden wouldn't have prosecuted Trump.
Right, exactly.
Trump.
Like maybe they would have just let him go off. Yeah.
But now it's like, you kind of have to. And it's like, in terms of like public opinion, it's like, you gotta do it.
Most people in this country want him out at this point.
But I'm just saying, like, you know, you open up, like Merrick Garland, future attorney general, AG, like, can start to prosecute everyone in the Trump administration specifically.
Oh, absolutely.
Or at least the ones who like had a hand in sort of like inciting all this violence.
Yeah, Trump, the kids, Giuliani, all of them.
And then, but then the other thing is like, Trumpism has always been a death cult, or at least like being a Trump supporter has always been being in a death cult. But now it's like, if there's any violence in the name of Trump, it should become like a national security concern. It should be immediately elevated to that level where it's like, okay, like the FBI is gonna like truly cut you off at every single level, and you're like, all these videos of like these fucking idiots being at airports being like, I'm on the no-fly list. It's like, yes.
You're a terrorist. Yes. Because you're a terrorist. Because you're a domestic terrorist who attempted to disrupt democracy by literally breaking into the Capitol building. Mm-hmm. And it's just so insane that there are still some people that work in our government, like namely like Senator Cruz, Senator Hawley, who should both absolutely resign or be kicked the fuck out there, who still want to die on this hill of, no, these people need to be heard. Get the fuck out of here. It is crazy. And the thing is, what's happening now is, insanely enough, we're starting to divide now between bad Republicans and good Republicans. And people are like, oh, look at Lindsey Graham getting hunted down in the airport. Yeah, he deserves it.
Yeah,
like,
of course,
remember that these two are beating the drum of like there was still election fraud, like, and stoking the flames of this and truly inciting this at this moment. But don't forget for one second that we should not even be anywhere close to this. And every single member of the GOP that has gone along with this, just do not forget it. Like, don't let fucking Mitch McConnell, because he's going through with the ceremony of it all at the last minute and deciding now that it's unacceptable. Don't forget that this all went down the way it went down for the last 4 years, 5 years at this point. It is such an ugly, just, I think everyone has just been, we've been unhealthier as human beings,
yes,
absorbing all of this as a result of it. It has really damaged all of us in our souls. And like, it's just so fucked up to see.
I'm even like not even forgiving of the fucking Murkowskis, where I'm like,
no,
it's a completely empty gesture for her to be like, I might not consider being a Republican. It's like, fuck you, you clown.
Oh my God.
You voted, like you confirmed Barrett, you confirmed jester. Kavanaugh, jester.
She's a jester queen.
No one, if you have aligned yourself with the Republican Party at any point, or if, at least if you've enabled Trump in any way in the last 4 years on that level and on a decision-making, yes, level, if you've been in charge, this is the distinction that I don't care on an individual level, someone's behavior or someone's like thought process necessarily. But when it comes to like you being in the fucking Senate and you like constantly, I mean, Murkowski is a fucking idiot, has always just like,
she's an idiot. Collins is an idiot. Yeah.
But they've come out just to like, truly in my mind, just to seek attention. It's there's no other explanation for it. Why is it always the two of them?
I mean, for me, it's just like, I think that they love to like flagrantly show how independent they are because they know that people where they're from, like quote unquote independent thinkers. Meanwhile, they're literally not independent thinkers. They'll just do whatever is expedient at the time. They're essentially like playing a game by being where they are. They're just looking, assessing situations and constantly doing damage control for themselves and scraping by. It's just funny that these people consider these moderates independent thinkers when they just have the ability to swing from the center.
Right.
So now you have Murkowski being like, you know, I might even switch parties. Yeah, no fucking kidding, who has the majority now. Mm-hmm, don't fall for it. It is bullshit. And I think this goes even further back than when Trumpism began and it was like, get on board or get off, which they all did. I think it goes back to, and people need to be accountable for, anyone that was responsible, and a lot of people have reckoned with this already and do good things, quote unquote good, to try and help swing a Biden victory this time successfully. But if you were checking a box that said McCain Palin on it, understand that you helped set a precedent that you could put a fucking idiot on the ticket who didn't know anything, just because it was politically expedient and it would cater to, I'm sorry, but the Trump base. And don't pretend just now to know who they are, because you campaigned around this country with Sarah Palin and saw the type of person that she whipped up. And then you thought that would just go away. But no, your party was literally set up for someone like Trump to come in. Cult of personality takes hold, and then we have what we have, which is this emboldening of a passionate voting bloc. And it's fucking crazy. And I'm sorry, but the GOP has been a joke my entire lifetime and your entire lifetime and preceding that, because it became a fucking reality show, entertainment program game about power. And it's fucked up. And I know I'm just like shouting this out into the ether on this podcast because everyone probably agrees. But if you don't, you need to soul search. This is like so beyond that we're here. We literally look like a crazy movie. It's insane. What's that movie with the guy from Closer, Clive Owen?
Closer.
Closer. We look like Closer.
We look like Closer. My real name is Jane.
It's Jane. Thanks. Still Jane.
Can we talk about Natalie? Can we just take a second to talk literally, about Miss Natalie Portman?
I have a research paper within me on her.
I think the goal for this year, 2021, is to get her on the pod. I think it could happen.
Oh, that would be... You know she's a Long Island queen.
She's a Long Island queen. I think Miss Natalie watches SNL from home.
I'm sure she does, as many millions do.
I think three-time host. I think she's on track to
join. She's fabulous every time.
Fabulous every time. She's on track to join the Five Timers Club within the next, 10 years, hopefully. Five.
Yeah, she can do it. And also, she's good enough to do it. Iconically, Natalie's rap, which we love. One of the iconic digital short. Digital short culture is culture.
Is culture.
Digital short culture short is culture capital is culture. C culture, and that's a rule of culture. That's rule of culture number 19.
Digital short culture is capital C culture. Culture. We, wow. You know what? I'm sorry. We're sorry we're doing this. We're like booking ahead and we're kind of flexing our like access.
I think
perhaps.
It's wonderful. Trixie Mattel's coming on the show next week.
Trixie Mattel's coming on the show next week. We're so excited. She texted Matt the exchange numbers and she said, "Hi, legend, it's Tracy." And it made me laugh and laugh.
I love Tracy Martell.
I just want to say, I think Sandberg would do it and would be great. And I think we could really actually.
I love Andy Sandberg.
He's the best in the world.
Ugh.
He's such good vibes. I think you and I could prepare a really good, like an interview that can top like a Marin, like a Marc Maron, Terry Gross.
We could prop up an interview that topped even Marin. We're going to top Marin.
We're going to top Marin. We're going to top Terry Gross. We're going to play a clip of Adam Driver.
Mission statement for the pod. Mission statement for the pod 2021. Topping
top
Marc Maron.
Maron.
We're going to top him.
We're going to top him. I think Sandberg deserves an interview from people who have been influenced by him directly. Like you and I, like directly.
I'm literally saying he is one of my number one comedic influences. He is, of course, of the same big dumb face school I went to. And just like to see him succeed being so big, I always loved. Like the digital shorts were always just their own thing. And he nails it for me every time. And the Lonely Island's music is actually good, which is something that makes me so H word happy.
Happy. Incredibad is so good. The second one,
Turtleneck and Chain.
Yes. I mean, truly wonderful. Did you see them at Clusterfest in San Francisco that year that they were there?
Out and watched them. And honestly, me seeing them live goes way back because when I was at the dorms at NYU, I walked to the Best Buy in Union Square where they were doing like a talk back and just sat in the back of the talk back and beamed, smiled at them. I was such a huge fan of them. But they did a performance at Clusterfest and it was really fun. It was like in the outdoor stage. God, I miss going to shows so much.
I know, me too.
Oh, it's like crippling, bitch.
Honey, I think. Oh my God, can I just say this is something real, real, real.
Oh my God.
Mushy, mushy gesture flop. But
okay,
first
flop.
Of all, for the reader should know that Matt and I, our brains have devolved over the holidays and all
yet
we can
again.
Say to each other, yet again, and all we can say flop. To each other. Get ready for a lot of the words flop and jester to be flying.
Jester,
at you.
You flop.
Done it again.
Flop, I hope you don't flop when you're saying this mushy thing. Go for it.
Flop, I won't flop because truly this is when we're talking about the readers and the readers have been so kind.
The best. We have the best listenership.
But a lot of really nice notes being sent to us about how they can't wait to see us live again whenever that may be. And but truly, like, this is lighting a fire under my something because I'm just like, oh yeah, like I, you know what? The priority number one once it's safe is for you and I to plan some live thing for
absolutely.
Some folks.
I want to do like big shows. I really want to block out time and do that.
I am like, I'm having like wistful memories of.
Oh God, the Bell House was just the most fun nights.
The most fun nights.
They were the most fun nights.
Absolutely. But I'm even saying like, I remember it being so stressful at the time, but the touring was actually beautiful. I was talking about this with Nicole Byer. Readers, fun. Why Won't You Date Me? Bo and Yang edition coming in like March, I want to say. But it was really fun. But Nicole and I were just talking about how like touring. Like,
what do you mean? Oh, you mean you did a Why Won't You Date Me?
I did a Why Won't You Date Me? And I was like,
oh,
wait.
I love it. That's the best.
I was like, I didn't realize I was like waiting for this, you know, and in terms of like not waiting for this, like as if I was entitled to it. Not that I'm entitled to like being a guest on that show, but I was just like, oh, this is like a fun, like little like, I'm on this show that I love to listen to, which I do. And it was just a really
exactly
fun thing.
And I was just saying like when I did it, it was more of a thing of like, oh, I get to do this with Nicole.
Yes,
you know what I
exactly.
mean? Like, it's just so fun to sit with her and be literally around her.
Yes.
I think that like she is truly one of the funniest, most obvious stars that I know.
it comes out of her like magic. Like she's just, she can be funny anytime. IDK.
Yes. She's a magic person. She's just a star. She just is.
She's a star. But anyway, we're dying to do some shows again for people and to hit up mm-hmm. a few places. That's what we're sort of manifesting for 2021. Right, Jester?
I would say, Jester, it would be such a flop if we didn't get to do one flop show in front of our fucking fans. What's the biggest flop show we've ever done? Honestly, what's been a flop that we've done?
A flop? I know. I think you and I...
Oh, I know when we flopped. We flopped when we did a show at the Pit as Sluck. We did a show at the Pit Underground as Sluck. It was a headlining show. It was because we literally were guesting on every show in town. There was a time when Bowen and I were most busy performing Sluck, which was our, if you don't know what Sluck is, lip sync garbage dance duo that were sluts. And we were just putting mixes together of like doing slutty songs. We wore underwear and crop tops and put disgusting makeup on and like basically flopped on stage. And people loved how slutty we were. So we got booked everywhere. And then we decided we would do a two-person show, just a headlining show, just a half hour of Sluck. And one person came, Amanda Schechtman, our
friend.
Amanda
Schechtman,
so we
God
did
bless.
A show for her. And I think literally she wasn't even trying to come. She was just upstairs for something. And we were like, can you watch us perform? Because it'll be literally just me and you because we didn't even have a tech.
We need to have Amanda back on because that is ride or die something. It's not ride or die, but it's like she's not a fair weather friend. She wasn't even there to see us, but the fact that she still sat down as the only person in that audience to watch us says everything.
Also, I think we put together some new mixes for that. We had and Sluck is not easy to do. Sluck is one of the hardest things any performer could do. Beyonce was offered Sluck and she passed. She said it's going to be too physically taxing. Beyonce passed. It was going to be Bowen and Beyonce.
And thank God Beyonce
and she passed on Sluck.
Thank God she
passed. It was that, our Dream Girls. She was beautiful, amazing. In Dream
Oh, that's
Girls,
right. This was around 2005. 2004?
No, it wasn't at all.
I know. We're, it's a dumb bit.
Never mind. I messed up. I messed up the bit.
That was a flop. I was going to say, I thought you were asking what was a flop Las Culturistas show that we've done. And
Okay, which one was?
Well, I don't fault.
Are you going to drag a city?
No, I was going to like disclaim that like this is not us dragging the city. It's us dragging like the way that everything aligned, which was that we were performing mm-hmm. at an all ages venue
and it was dry.
And I think maybe it is like, it was just that we were off one night. Maybe
I think, can I be honest? Like it is like every time you do a live show, it is a little bit like rolling the dice, but honestly, you and I are both live performers. So I'm never worried about us. But the thing is like, with that audience in particular, I was doing the show and I literally said in my own head, I was like, oh, we cannot do this without alcohol involved. Like people have to be, I feel that way about like most shows I do. I'm like, let's get people a little drunk, please.
Right.
A dry all ages show in Seattle. In the winter, it wasn't popping off.
Sure. Oh yes.
And we flopped.
So we didn't say this up front, but it was Seattle and this is not us, that it's not a dig at the city. And in fact, so many wonderful people came. And remember, we got... And then, I forgot who, but...
There were those two cute boys that we... The second we left them, we were like, we should have talked to them more. We should have went out for drinks with them.
We should have, but they gave us gifts. Those two boys gave us gifts.
I know, and they also were hot. I wonder if they still listen.
Well, it was a wonderful... It was a good experience. I'm glad we... And then you and I got to walk around the Space Needle, and that was cute.
Yeah, that Space Needle was cute. I wonder if those boys listen and they want a picture of me nude. Do they want a picture of me nude? Would you like one? Do you want a picture of me nude?
You have to write that.
This is a song I'm writing right now.
Do you want a picture of me nude? I think it's a hit.
I took an edible right before the episode.
Oh, I should have done that too. Damn it.
And it's hitting, girl.
Jester.
I have some list. Can I tell you, Jester? So we wouldn't flop today. I wrote down some topics of things that have happened or are happening.
You think we're flopping and so you're consulting the list?
No. I don't think we're flopping at all. I think this is going splendidly, but I really wanted to make sure I talked with you about one thing.
Okay.
Which is why I bring it up. Flop?
Flop.
We pulled ourselves out of our flopdom and you watched Jaws and I watched The Sound of Music and I want to give takes. I want to let the readers know how we felt because this is iconic culture that we were receiving initially.
So we watched separately and this was a moment for us.
Yes. So this was Bowen was sort of live texting me through The Sound of Music.
No, you were live texting me through Sound of Music. I was live texting you through Jaws.
Well, yes, but sort of when you're live texting a person, that person is sort of live texting you as well. You know what I mean? It's sort of like if we're holding hands, we're both holding hands. You know what I mean? One person isn't holding hands with the other person.
I don't have time to get into this.
I have literally no time to get into this. But anyway, we were live texting. We shared a live text moment about both films. And I just want to say, how many stars would you give Jaws out of 5 stars?
Well, I was just really impressed overall with how it still works as like a horror movie. Mm. And I think it probably set a bunch of horror rules. Like it set a bunch of like conventions in horror. I give Jaws 4 out of 4.5 stars.
Oh my God. And so tell us like, critic, what is the half star that it's missing that it would have been good, but you're taking away this half a star?
I wanted to see Jaws herself. I wanted to see Jaws not just come try to eat the boat. I wanted to see Jaws maybe jump out the water into the sky. I wanted to see full body Jaws because, like, I get it. The technology at the time didn't allow it, but I needed to see Jaws just to get a full understanding of, you know, what am I looking at when I hear the word Jaws? And honestly, the town should have been called Jaws. And actually, no, I have a bone to pick with the readers. They think that I really thought that the town was called Jaws. I was being willfully obtuse. Fool. No, flop.
You were you were flopping hard on Lost Cult.
Jester.
And here you are today, Jester Queen, trying to say, no, you know what?
No.
All the readers know. They can just go back. They have the tape. This is Trumpism. This is what you do. This is a dog whistle to your supporters.
Everyone's being a flop right now, including hot head of content Hans, who's saying you're crazy. The movie only works because you don't see Jaws. No,
I think that you are a little crazy, and I think that Bowen is like what happened when he said the town is called Jaws, sort of just like being a little bit controversial on purpose.
Okay, so then you're admitting that I was being obtuse.
Okay, fine. I can admit that I thought the comment was obtuse. When he said the town was called Jaws, I thought to myself, okay, this bitch wants to play. This bitch wants to sort of get a little dirty right now. And I gave you that, and I've let it go on this long to the point where I can say I knew all along it was obtuse. I really did, which is how I know you're being bullshit now. Because let's bring it to what it's really about, which is you talking about how the shark should jump in the sky. You really think this, bitch?
Well, bitch, you're the one who's inciting all of this vitriol at me.
Don't use that trigger word with me.
You
don't.
Are
you dare use a trigger
the
word
dog
with me.
Whistles. Jester.
You trigger. If you keep triggering me,
you're getting
fire.
I'm
Monique.
You don't have that power. What did you think of Sound of Music? How many stars would you give to Sound of Music?
Well, you sort of gave a summation of your review and then gave the stars, so I will allow myself the same opportunity for suspense. Thank you very much. Okay, so I felt that the Sound of Music really showcased a star in Julie Andrews. I think that she gave a performance for the ages. This performance will go down in history as a defining one of the musical theater genre. She is shining bright, resplendent, and when her heart breaks, so does yours. And she's able in merely short scenes to sort of foster a connection with so many of the children that you feel and are invested in, and you can follow her emotionally and you feel her conflict, which is she wants to be a nun, right? Doesn't she want to be a nun? And then this otherworldly feeling comes in, and that feeling is romantic love. And she feels it with Captain Von Trapp, who is a difficult person because he's lost in his life. He is lost. And he's got a lot of responsibility, and he's got a lot of kids to take care of. Mm-hmm. And so he is a little bit by the book. And you know what? Yes, he is engaged to the Baroness.
What did you think of the Baroness?
I thought that she presented a case for as best character in a film history. I thought she presented a case.
People do
when
love
the Baroness came in, and you see her connection with Mr. Max, or Ms. Max, as we say.
Yes.
That was a fully realized relationship. And you know what? I feel that, you know, the Baroness is not a villain in this, okay?
No, because she
is just playing her lot in life.
Yes.
And she is in love and she is heartbroken. Mm-hmm. But the fact of the matter is, the relationship of Captain Von Trapp and Maria is a force of nature. And it changes the course of their lives. And because of that love and teamwork, they're able to make a real family in the Von Trapps. And they are the family Von Trapps. And as a team, and as a unit, they are able to escape the Nazis. The greatest love triumphed over the greatest evil in the film, The Sound of Music. And there are temptations along the way. Because Liesl, she is feeling, she is one of the most important supporting characters, Liesl.
In all film history.
In all film. She is feeling this pull too, but it is towards Rolf, who is a Nazi, and it has to be said. Plain. Rolf is a Nazi. So every time we're doing, you are 16 going on 17, understand this is the song of a Nazi.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's a Nazi saying, baby, it's time to think. When a Nazi tells you, baby, it's time to think, you better run the other way.
You better get out.
And log off Parler. Oh, wait, it's offline because Amazon stopped hosting it. Okay?
So, yes, I did say several times while watching this, this feels very prescient now. I did say that several times. I remarked that.
You texted.
But you know what? Ultimately, not only is this dynamic story incredible, and yes, good does triumph, but the music was incredible.
Speak
music
on
was incredible. Edelweiss. We never stop crying at that song.
No.
I give the film 5 stars.
Out of?
The Sound of, out of 5.
Oh
my God. I give the film 5 stars. Sound of Music was an incredible musical feat of filmmaking. I'm so happy I watched it.
The way my sister was the opposite of a jester, opposite of a flop, a soaring king in that review of The Sound of Music.
And that you can't love yourself enough to give Jaws 5 stars. That's right. During a tender moment, I will attack.
Honey,
you have a personal problem.
The scale, it's 4. I gave it 4 out of 4.5 stars. So the full, I don't care to do the math right now, but it's almost 5 stars. It's more than, I'm giving it more than 4.5 stars. No, not
you
more.
Said the flaw was that the shark didn't fly in the sky. That's what you said.
Jaws had that ability.
He did not. I assure you, she get it right. Because that was a girl boss.
No.
If I've ever...
Bruce
Jaws
is not a girl.
Was a girl boss if I've ever seen one. And that's a rule of culture number 92.
Jaws was a
girl boss
if I've ever seen one. Can you talk about the way that The Sound of Music is a breezy 3 hours?
I didn't think about the length. Bitch, I'm out here.
I'm keyed in.
I'm constantly thinking about the length of movies.
Oh, me too.
What did I watch recently? Oh, Soul. Girl, why? It wasn't even honestly that long, but halfway through I was like, why am I only here? Movies are so long. This movie was such a classic. I was in it. And also I was prepared and happy for the event of the film.
Yes, yes. Oh, because it was an event for you. You found it on your little TV app. and said, we're doing this.
I saw it there. I saw it standing there and I said, this is the moment. And I'm so happy that you followed up that moment with the undertaking that is watching Jaws, also a long film.
Well, Jaws,
I would say if there's a half star to be knocked off, it is the very true fact that it feels lengthy.
Well, it was lengthy and yet it moved at an incredible clip. And you had told me about the Quint monologue, Robert Shaw.
Oh, wasn't that amazing?
The acting.
That Thank was truly you. Amazing acting.
Truly amazing acting. Richard Dreyfuss giving you hot scientist.
You were attracted.
Yes, very deeply. I love someone with knowledge. And so I guess that goes for Quint too. Quint had some knowledge. The person who didn't really have knowledge was the Roy Scheider character. I was like, you know.
But he was the hot one, I felt.
He was hot, but he didn't know anything. He knew how to like work the boat, kind of, but other than that.
Right. He was more just having a good spirit.
I was just kind of shocked at how filmic Jaws was. I'm like, they don't make movies. Yes. They don't make big budget movies like this anymore. Where they're like,
that was the 70s.
That was the 70s. And you had like, you know, Roy Scheider doing like the making the faces with his son. I'm like, oh, you don't get like that would Love never it. Happen in a big budget movie nowadays.
Yeah. It's almost like how the original Star Wars kind of seem way more authentic than the ones that came out right, like the episode 1, 2, and 3, the ones with Natalie, because the special effects took it so to cartoon world that there was that disparity between the live action and the CGI just kind of people lost. It lost something.
Something got lost.
And then watching the old ones, you're kind of just like, oh yeah, like this is a real. I'm more invested in the stakes for them because it feels like that thing is a part of their world. You know what I mean? Like tractor, you know what I mean? Like might crush them, the trash compactor or whatever.
Say
but now
that.
It's like so much.
Oof.
Or around that time it was anyway.
Although I did text you that over Christmas, I did watch episode 9 for the first time and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
The newer ones I actually think are better because everything about them is so heightened. That's why whenever anyone even compares like the Daisy Ridley ones to the Mark Hamill ones, I'm like, they're completely different. Like it's never going to live up to the nostalgia and love you're going to have for something that was made during that time with a child's eye, when movies were made differently and when you had child's eyes. Like accept these movies for what they are, which are for children, like fantasy whatevers. They're never going to be like smarter than anything else. They just have to entertain and make choices. And it seems like people get mad at the new ones because they make choices instead of rinse repeating.
And they do make choices. And I truly loved like the like wildness in like Adam Driver, spoiler alert, making out with Daisy Ridley at the end before he...
Oh,
like
breathtaking.
I'm like, this is so funny and crazy and like... And what other movie would this happen in if not Star Wars right now? And
literally, it was drag.
It was... Yes, sure. It was like...
I kept saying it was camp and that's why I liked it. Because Keri Russell in that outfit to me was camp.
It is camp. You never see Keri Russell's face. And... It's like the movie is crazy.
It's fully crazy.
And
Babu Frick?
Babu Frick, get out.
Icon.
Hot. Icon.
One of the most stunning, sexually stunning men in the world.
Yes. But
Babu Frick.
But this is everyone's issue with episode 8, which is not like, I don't think it's the greatest Star Wars movie. It deserves some sort of flowers for the way that it made choices with fucking Laura Dern saying pew pew and then like kamikazing into a Star Destroyer. Like, come on.
And you know what? You have to think of it as a choice because, I mean, she did say pew pew.
She said pew pew and they kept it. And they kept it.
And they kept it.
And Miss like Ryan Starbucks Johnson cup. Kept it. Yes.
Yeah, I believe it was there on purpose. Okay? That I'll always say that. Pew pew was there on purpose and so is that Starbucks cup.
Mm-hmm,
I think they wanted the conversation. I think that they're entertainment industry people first and foremost.
And did they succeed? Absolutely.
Second. And they had us talking, girl. But yes, I genuinely loved pretty much everything about the last one. And I liked The Last Jedi because what I loved about The Last Jedi was when the reveal was, when she realized that she was no one, she was not actually connected to the mythology. And I love that because it made a choice about her, like that they weren't going to give us this fan service. But then it was funny because when the next movie came out, I was gagging for the fan service. I'm like, yes, she's the granddaughter of Palpatine, actually. It's like, to think that that man had children. Anyway, at that point, I was just like, yes, queen. And when they were looking at each other, and I was like, they better kiss. That is how this pays off. And then they did. And then he died?
Incredible.
We respect the drama of that. It was soap opera level. And that's because that's what they are.
That's what they are. And I have to commend the fight sequences. I mean, when they trade off the lightsaber, or just anytime they had, they like would like go into different set. Like, I was just like, this must have been a nightmare to shoot. And they pulled it off. So I was just like genuinely impressed. I was also stoned and I was watching this and I was like, wow, I'm having a great time.
Ooh. You know that, you know how my experience of seeing it? Me and Matt Whitaker went to a 4DX theater.
And it, where the seats move?
I'm telling you, the seats move. It is a theme park ride. You know I was gagging.
You were gagging.
And Bowen, I kid you not, we sit down. Matt is like a little bit sensitive. Like, motion sickness is not not difficult for him to get, I guess. So he was like, I don't know. And I was like, please, let's try. So the very first thing that happens, and it's insane to think about this now in the age of Corona, is they blast you with water from the seat in front of you. Like, just water blasts in your face from this strange chair.
Ew.
And just to show off what they can do in the beginning, and like the surround sound is going and the chair is moving and you're like, oh my God. And then the movie starts and it's literally like, someone walks into frame and the chair goes like, you turn to face them. It's like you're really moving like a simulator.
We've talked about this because I had the same experience with Julio Torres when we saw Maleficent, Mistress of Evil. But did you and I also do this? I think we did this in Vancouver when we watched Alita Battle Angel.
Oh my God. We only made it through half of that movie.
We're sorry to say we walked out of that movie.
But it wasn't because the movie was bad. We found out I got the job at the other two, and then we went to go have drinks.
Yes.
We were just like, fuck this movie. Let's go have drinks.
But I think, weren't those also like 40X equivalent seats where like...
They were rumbling, but they weren't. I'm telling you, I would remember if it was what this was, because it was like literally like... by the time there was battles happening at the end, it was over. It was like, rah, 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 rah. And I will say, Matt Whitaker, sweet angel, stayed in the chair the whole time.
Angel. Ugh.
The best. But it was definitely a way to experience that movie. Cause like, it's just so funny. Cause even emotional beats get like the jerkiness that like huge battles get. But anyways. I'm so happy that we enriched ourselves with that culture in this way. You seeing more Star Wars?
Girl, I might have to get on this Mandalorian trip. I am opening. I am truly, I'm the king. I'm saying, Hans asked, did you both see Tenet? We did not see Tenet.
No, girl.
I don't think I need to be in the right mood. Maybe I'll take an edible and watch Tenet sometime soon.
I watched Jumanji last night and got my fucking life.
The original Jumanji?
Original. The OG. And let's just say this. Kirsten Dunst gives a performance.
We've talked about this. In the grocery store with the taser? With the scanner?
She is... Oh, price check. But her price iconic check, yeah. Moments are like in the beginning of the movie, like their parents have died. They just died. They died in a car crash. But her character's thing is every new person she meets, she has a monologue about the insane way they died. Like, she makes them up. She crushes every single one of them. Also, the way that she like experiences fear and suspense is, she is an innate talent. She was such a good child actress.
She's got a point. She's an icon. She's a legend. And she's a legend. She is the moment.
And she is the moment.
Now, come on now.
Come on now. Another exclusive way Bowen and I have been communicating recently is in that Wendy Williams quote.
And then it opened up the gates to another video that we shared with each other, where it was a compilation video of Wendy Williams' quote, most controversial moment. happens. And it's her truly saying wild things.
The worst we'll leave it at that. Things in the world. Yeah, just why don't you go watch it?
You guys go watch it, but
we don't need to repeat her words. This is one other thing that the readers have been sort of strident about, which is we do have to give thoughts on Evermore. We have literally not talked about it since it's been out. And I think that we're actually working at a little bit of a deficit here, because I'm going to ask you this question and I'm going to respect you enough to think you're going to give an honest answer. Have you listened to it really?
I've only given it 3 full listens.
Wow. Can I tell you? I've only gotten through it like 4 or 5 times. I don't know what it is. Maybe I'm still living in folklore land, but what I ended up doing was I made like I listened to it a few times and I was like, these are the songs that are grabbing me. And I put those in with my favorite songs from folklore. And I made a playlist called Folkmore. And I like my version of it. So I like some of the songs a lot. Like I really like Willow.
Love Willow. I've been listening to Willow a lot. Dancing Witch Remix, Elvira.
Nobody, No Crime. I know I like and you don't.
I don't think it works. I don't think... I see they were going for like a Goodbye or All with Haim, and it didn't click. I think anytime you listen to a Taylor Swift album, it's emotional listening. And what I mean by that, it's like in terms of like, you know, the way that emotional is used, the word emotional is used in terms of like, oh, it's emotional marketing, it's emotional tech, it's emotional this. It's like, you know, the idea that you feel something as you listen to a record is like part of Taylor's whole ethos. And the fact that Folklore coming out was huge, I think.
We're both literally in the cardigans. We love it.
We're wearing the cardigans. I feel like Evermore being announced and dropped within 24 hours when she announced it, I was just kind of like, maybe it was the holidays and it was just busy. And I didn't have the room in my emotional real estate to be like, I'm going to listen to the Taylor Swift album. And... Mm-hmm. But maybe, like, honestly, it was a couple people being like, I hope it's not Folklore B-sides. And then it kind of, just saying that alone, like, colored my expectations going in and being like, this is just going to be Folklore B-sides, which I don't think it is. Ultimately, it is not Folklore B-sides. It has its own identity.
Yeah.
I just, nothing will shock me in the same way that Folklore did.
Right.
Where it was such a turn into something different.
And I do think as a body of work, Folklore is stronger now, having listened to it more. But there's some really good songs here. Like, I love Champagne Problems. And I had to listen to it a few times to really understand what it was. Mm-hmm. But now that I do, I just like, I love that song so much. Yeah. Just, whew. This is what I love about her. She's able to tell a specific story. Like, I just think, that's something I've loved about these two albums, is her sort of return to real storytelling. And even with No Body, No Crime, the reason I like it is because it's actually really specific, and it feels inventive, but also familiar, which is another thing that she's really good at. I love Gold Rush. I had to listen to it a few times to understand the trend, to like understand and like the transition from the verse into the chorus, because it is stark. But once I got into it, that song is a vibe. And my other favorite is Tolerate It, because again, she got really specific with the lyrics. Yeah, and that's her track 5. And
that's a track 5, baby. Ivy, Marjorie, Cowboy Like Me. I like Dorothea. I mean, it's a great album. I just it's tough for me to like think about it in a vacuum or just separately from
it's
Folklore.
So on the heels. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I will say, I'm still like bumping the songs from Folklore in ways that I didn't used to. Like now every song that it's familiar for me, like I'm raging every time. Like when the last Great American Dynasty plays around me, there's nothing else happening in the world. I fucking love that song. And she ultimately did add to her insane catalog with these albums. They're so good.
I mean, you need to watch this Fran Lebowitz series, by the way.
Oh my God, I've been meaning to. And like, I did watch some of it, but it looks incredible.
It's great. I'm sure a lot of readers have watched it, and especially like it's coming perfectly like 10 years after Public Speaking, which was like the Scorsese doc from HBO. Mm-hmm. I was telling you, like, it's like taking me back to college days when like I thought I was the coolest fucking person in the world for like reading like Metropolitan Life and being like, I love Fran Lebowitz. She's an epigrammist, whatever. But she has this thing that has blown my... She says this thing in the new series on Netflix that's blown my mind, which is that she's like, society loves... Like, no one is more loved in society than musicians. And then Scorsese's like, yeah, sure. Like, and then she's like, and the reason why is because, like, music is something that, like, you listen to. The music that you like, you listen to, and you're immediately happier. Yeah. At least for specific, if you're going for that experience, like that's what, if you're looking to get that out of the music you want to listen to, that's what you get. She's like, I grew up with Motown. Anytime a Motown song comes on, I'm immediately happier. Do I think it's the best music ever written compared to like Mozart? No. But in terms of like the chemical change that happens in my brain when I listen to a Motown song, music is like drugs that aren't bad for you. She's like, it's the only thing in the world that makes you immediately happier and is not bad for you. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh my God, she's right. And that's why stan culture is a thing. We talk about like, it's crazy that like stans are like this passionate about their idols. But it's like, no, this is why. It's because like you put on a song and it like changes your mood. I know we're saying something very, I'm saying something very basic, but it's like, that is the whole, like, it's kind of changed my approach in how I listen to music now. Cause now I'm just like, I want to like feel good. Let me put on Levitating by Dua Lipa. You know, it's like, that's like the thing. Anyway, you got to watch it.
I also think it's funny that it stan culture feels new, because literally there has always been stan culture. You know what I mean? Yes. Going back to the Beatles, you know what I mean? When there was a mania about people, as long as people were able to know about music, there was an opportunity to be fanatical about it and go to extremes and act abnormal because you love the music so much. Like, and that's the way, like, girls passing out because they see the Beatles because they got so hyperventilating to that state. That's like the equivalent of someone like popping off on Twitter nowadays. Like, that's how that energy is being expelled. So it's just interesting that like we've found a way as a society to like target that energy at each other. It's so crazy that like even fandom is weaponized in culture.
Yes. I mean, this is the second episode where she just talks about culture, and it's like, it's so funny. Like, someone in the audience, like, it cuts to a lot of like talkbacks that she's done or speaking engagements that she's done, and someone's like, Fran, how do you develop a sense of humor? And she was like, the same way one develops height. Like, she's just so like, just like, I don't know. She just, the delivery is always impeccable. That's the thing that people...
She is a singular person. Yeah.
Well, it's like Josh Sharp and I were talking about it. It's like, she's a comedian, and like, she like, she delivers. She's a
performer for sure.
She zings it in, and it's like, oh yeah. Like, she knows how to like make something pop and hit the ear. Right.
Yeah. Her character is amazing. And also she is really, I mean, I love, there's a story she said recently about, or not a story, just something she was saying recently about how, you know, with the AIDS crisis. And so she says like, you know, it wasn't the people that were like the... I hate that. It doesn't feel right coming out of my mouth, but she was like, uncool people did not die of AIDS is basically what she was saying. And that because that's the case, all the good art, all the interesting stuff was gone, and it was filled in the culture with people that were second rate, which is why she says culture is second rate now. She says that if her friends that she knew back in the 80s were alive today, that she'd be like, guess who's a star now? Right, and they would laugh for hours at who's a star and who's popular, because like the best of the best were lost to that AIDS epidemic.
It is like, I think she has gotten flack in the past for that specific like take, but
because it's an insane take, but also
there's a kernel of something there. My favorite Fran thing ever is when she goes, she's like, the worst thing that happened in New York City, she's like, you know, like the city was bankrupt in the 70s and in the 80s. And like three people got together in a room and said, let's fix that by having people come, by like building these tourist attractions. And she's like, that's the worst thing that's ever happened to the city, because she goes, there's no way that you have a bunch of hillbillies. These are her words. She goes, there's no way that a bunch of hillbillies descending on a city does not impact the city itself. There's no way. And so,
right.
Like, and so she'll be like, you know, I'll be walking down the street and I'll hear tourists say things like, oh yeah, that restaurant where the waiters sang, I hated that. And she's like, you hated that? Then tell us. If you hated that, then tell us, because we built that for you. So if you hate that, then we can take that down and replace it with something that we need. Like, she's like, you know what Times Square needs? A butcher shop. She's like, Times Square doesn't need like a museum, like Ripley's, believe it or not. It needs like a place to like send the mail. She's like, it's adversely affected New York City in the way that like it has become, that because New York didn't used to be a tourist attraction in the past, you know? Wait, what is that face? What are you doing?
Yeah, no, I'm literally just, I'm writhing thinking about when I used to work at the Ride and we would go through Times Square and the script was like, this was all changed by Rudy Giuliani. Like it just gave him so much credit over having that like Times Square-ifying of New York. And I'm just thinking about Rudy Giuliani and I'm seething. I'm like sitting here thinking, wow, this is the worst person. I think if I could target one worst person in my lifetime, it might be him. Just Rudy, in terms of public figures that I've despised for the longest. He is up there because I don't love.
You have to direct your ire at people who have decision-making power. That is the thing. It's like, I don't really give a shit at this point whether or not I don't get angry at some layperson who like says or does something stupid unless they are like
unless
charge.
They're really harmful.
Yeah. Anyway, what else is on your list? Flop? Are we flopping?
Oh, flop. No, we're actually slaying. I mean, we should probably just say Drag Race is back. And it is good.
I am grateful that it's back. I have been on a journey with Drag Race from like, I think I speak for a lot of people who are like, it's the glut of it is too much. We've watched too much Drag Race. Canada, Holland, season 12, All Stars 5. Like, it's too much. Make it go away for as long as possible. And then truly only like 4 months passed and all of a sudden season 13's back on. And I'm like, oh my God, thank God.
Thank God. But literally, I will say this. I think this, for me, I'll just be honest. When season 11 happened and I didn't think it was a good season, I kind of said to myself, like, okay, like a bad season of it is possible because it has been on for a long time. And that's just something that happens to shows that have been on for a long time. Like, they lose an edge. But I will say this. I feel like the show has come back and it's really found a way to like give it an edge. I love the premiere, and shout out to Dave Mazzoni, who was involved in the creative for this season.
Shout out.
And I loved the way that like there were six full lip syncs, because that's really what you want to see, is you want to see them perform. I know this wasn't popular with the fandom, but for me, I was living that we were getting so many performances, and it felt like isolated. We got to know everyone that's going to be on the show, which is what I loved.
And you see them do in some essential way in that, like, I mean, this is not for me to say as someone who doesn't perform drag, but it's like some essence of drag. I take it back. I was going to say some essence of drag is like, it's just lip syncing. Like, that is like, it's part of theme. It's like, it's baked into like the drag queen direction of it. It's baked into the female impersonation aspect of drag,
right,
where it's like you lip sync. And so I enjoyed it. I loved the premiere a lot. I love these queens. I think there's some really good ones. Even the quote unquote filler queens, I'm like, oh, I like them. Like, I love that they kept Elliot. I'm like, oh, great. And like,
I really grew to, Elliot really grew on me, actually. Yeah. Like, when they did the winner's episode, the second episode, Elliot during that episode really grew on me. Do I think Elliot has fucking nailed it every single time? No, I think some of the looks they're just maybe a little bit like broad. But Rue seems to really like Elliot's style.
I didn't mind her entrance look where it was just like late 80s, or it was just like Saved by the Bell. I was cute.
Yeah, it was like Saved by the Bell, like she could go into aerobics at any minute type of aesthetic. And for me, I was just like, that's your entrance look. Like, I like a high impact entrance look, because for me, it's like, you're a drag queen, you're on Drag Race, do it. You know what I mean? Like, go for it. Show off. Like, it's your moment. And she comes in wearing that. It's like, okay. But I thought that who had a really good high impact look was Candy Muse. I just loved that. It was very New York. It was very Candy Muse. Very, right. Because she is formerly House of Azure. She was like a big New York deal, or Brooklyn deal as well. And she was just like, was so herself. And I loved the boombox. And I just loved the way she got to press it on and off with the song. I don't know. I loved it. I really like her personality.
I think it's time.
I think it might be time. And that time when we sort of say it's time refers to, I don't think so, honey.
Mm-hmm.
It does. Which is, I guess, what would you say? Like a
it's segment? Kind of like a segment where we each take 1 minute to rail against something in culture. Right?
You'll see. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you'll see.
I would say.
Yeah, okay.
You'll see. It's very self-explanatory once it happens.
Do you have something?
I do have something.
This is Matt Rotter's I Don't Think So, Honey, and his time starts now.
I Don't Think So, Honey, felt cute, will delete later, or might delete later. Bitch, I hate this. If it's cute,
coming for me,
why would you delete it? We follow you. We would assume to see cute / funny / attractive / appealing things. Why would you delete it if it's cute? If you're embarrassed to be indulgent on the platform, I got news for you, bitch. You have the wrong platform. I don't think so, honey. These people that are making me follow a dramatic narrative in my life that I did not ask for. I did not turn you on, darling, to follow the narrative of the will they, won't they between you and the status deletion. I don't need another bullshit nothing narrative to follow. I watched too many seasons and series of Housewives for that. Felt cute, might delete later. No, bitch. Be brave. Be bold. Keep up the thing you posted for attention the first time. I don't think so, honey. This.
And that's 1 minute.
You do this.
I do this, and I can't disagree with you. Does it annoy you?
I feel like it's just a tug of war. It's no, you know what? Yes, it does. I was going to back off, but it annoys. Just think of another caption. It's so filler. It's filler queen status. It's flop.
It's flop. I mean, for me, it's just that I feel self-conscious and I'm like, no, I'll take this off.
Girl, no. Proudly put up everything you want to put up. I'm telling you, if you hit post on it, you wanted people to see it. So stand by your decision.
You're right. I'm a flop.
Stand by your decision.
I'm a jester. No. I'm a jester.
Look, I'm not going to lie to you. In your life, you've done jester things. You've done flop things. Remember that Maison Kitsune sweatshirt that you bought when we could not afford that? I thought that was a flop. I did not like that sweatshirt.
Can I tell you?
I couldn't believe.
I was kind of purging some stuff from my closet, and that flop sweatshirt's been hanging in my closet on a felt hanger for years. I have not worn it once. It does not fit on me anymore because it's just shrunk. I've not washed it properly. Tossed it.
Oh my God. Wow. It's not even in the Hall of Fame. I almost wish you had kept it. I want it.
No. It's not. I mean, I'm sure like some place will sell it somewhere, but
I want to hang that up in a glass case in my house one day. I'm not kidding.
For the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I'd want. I just no. For the Hall of Fame, forget that. Forget these sort of, fake
shrines.
Bits. I want that piece for my house. Forget bits, okay? Forget jokes, games, anything we could say insincere. No, I want that piece for my house.
You'll get it. You'll be able to find it somewhere. It's a pretty widely produced garment, I think. That
no,
is still
it's not the one that you bought. You don't understand.
It doesn't matter.
You don't understand sentimentality. You don't. You're very cold. That's why you came on here sort of shaking your eyes at me, despite me working so hard to see.
No, you can't
that
start
the ads
crying.
Were done. I worked really hard on the ads. Okay.
Good job.
On the ritual ad. Anyway, okay. Do you have something this week?
I do. It's a little controversial, maybe.
Oh my God. You are a lightning rod, bitch. Another legend. Fucking proud to be your best friend.
Anyway. Thank you, bestie.
Thank you, bestie. Non-flop.
Oh, Jester my flop God. Best, the title of ep is Jester Flop Bestie.
Jester Flop Bestie.
Bestie.
Title of absolute ep. Jester Flop Bestie. Oh, no. That's going to be merch. I have ideas for merch. Here's merch we need to do.
Capitalist.
Jester Flop Bestie.
Yes.
Avid reader.
Yes. Oh, he's flipping pages.
I have
pages.
A list of things.
Okay.
Girl, the way I've been bookkeeping lately, I wrote a list of my resolutions. Queen.
Okay, bullet right. journal down.
Okay.
Here we go.
Non-flop writer.
Jester Flop Bestie.
This is Bowen Yang's I Don't Think So, Honey. His time starts now.
I Don't Think So, Honey. Meryl Streep saying she doesn't like any action movie. Bitch! Oh,
have shut you up, seen, bitch!
Have you seen Spy, directed by Paul Feig, starring Melissa McCarthy, Jason Statham, and Rose Byrne? That is, I mean, they're... It's so dumb to me that anyone, especially Meryl Streep of all people, to make a blanket statement about a genre of culture of art and say, there's nothing I like about it. There's something. You sound like a MySpace teen from 2003 saying, everything except rap and country. There's one action movie that you like at
Drag
least, Meryl.
Them.
Meryl Streep. Mary Ellen, whatever her real name is, stage
Mary
name.
Louise,
Mary
flop,
Louise, right? Flop. Oh, they couldn't think of a character, a name for your character on Big Little Lies season 2, so they named you Mary Louise. You're a flop, Meryl. I'm so ashamed that you wouldn't like
seconds.
Any action movie, especially the best action movie of all time, which is Spy, starring Melissa McCarthy.
And that's 1 minute. See, I don't know if I can stand by calling it the best action movie of all time, but
I
certainly
can.
Thought it was a fun action comedy. Well, Bowen Yang can, and that's really what matters at the end of the day, right?
You and I both called Meryl Streep bitch on this episode, and we have to live with
no,
that.
No, but the thing is, my opinion on Meryl is she is the deity, and I believe
of
she
course.
Deserves a nomination for The Prom. And when we say bitch, she knows, and or she should know or can know from my mouth that it is in adoration constantly.
I just, you know, it's hard to see your heroes let you down. And I think Meryl let me down when she said she was on Colbert, and Colbert, you know, asked her, what's your favorite sandwich? What's your favorite this? And then he got to, what's your favorite action movie? She made a face and was like, there aren't any. And I'm like, Meryl, you know that's not true.
Yeah. It was like you saying the town was called Jaws. You know what I mean?
No,
that's exactly what it was. It's literally exactly what
you're
it was.
You're being a jester and a flop and not a bestie, honey. You're not being a bestie to me.
The fact of the matter is, and let me absolutely tell you this to your face, is if I didn't tell you that, I wouldn't be being your bestie. Okay? It's important to have someone in this life, the one I'm pointing to right now, to be held accountable.
The way my sister, my bestie, holds me accountable, and I receive it. I love you. I love my sister.
I love you dearly. I think we look stunning in these cardigans.
I'm
actually looking at it, and it is a look. Yes, you do.
I just love the elbows. I love the stars on the elbow patches.
See, that's the one elbow. Thing I would lose. The one thing I would lose
no,
is the stars on the elbows.
This is what makes it special, sweetie.
No, honey, I think that what makes it special, darling dear, are these gorgeous lines on the what did you call this?
Like the cables. On the collar. No. Well,
I just love this. Like,
take it up with Taylor if you don't like the stars, because guess what? She designed this herself. Bestie.
I respect her. I respect her artistic choice. That's what I would lose. I'm not going to cut them off, darling dear. You sometimes flop the way you think about me.
Me. Oh my God. I think this was a great start to the year. I think we've set some intentions, set some goals.
I wanted to ask you one thing about your resolutions. Have you done them quickly? Yes.
I've told you in private where my resolutions are, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've done them. I've stuck to them.
And they remain private.
They remain private. Yes. What
and
about you?
I can tell you privately. Privately, I can tell you. I've been slaying my resolutions.
Oh, I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud of my sister.
And this is between us. This is between us and the readers.
There's nothing scandalous. We should just say that there's nothing illicit about the resolutions. We're just like, we don't want to like... Some things in life have to be sacred, okay?
This is a sacred moment.
Sacred moment.
And this is a sacred moment of the podcast. And because we are ending on a sacred moment, we're going to end on a sacred song.
There can be miracles when you believe.
When you believe,
the hope is real.
It's hard to keep.
Who knows what miracle?
Imagine if we had like just done the harmony like spontaneously.
That's why we're not Whitney and Mariah.
I guess we just flopped.
Flopped. Bye.
Bye.